My featured musical this evening is The Rothschilds, with music by Jerry Bock and lyrics by Sheldon Harnick, and we shall be listening to the original 1970 Broadway cast recording. The musical opened on Broadway at the Lundfontein Theatre on October the 19th, 1970, and ran for 507 performances, receiving 9 Tony Award nominations in the process, with 2 wins in the categories of Best Actor in a Musical for Hal Linden and Best Featured Actor in a Musical for Keane Curtis. And to tell us all about the background of the Rothschilds, it is my very great pleasure to welcome back to the airwaves of 96.5 Inner FM, via telephone from New York, the Tony Award-winning lyricist and co-writer of the show, Sheldon Harnick. Good evening, Sheldon.
Thank you, Rob. Did you say that I wrote the book and lyrics?
No, I didn't. I said you were a co-writer of the show, so I suppose a lyricist still qualifies as a co-writer,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Right. The book was written by a wonderful writer named Sherman Yellen. As a matter of fact, shortly after Fiddler on the Roof opened, Jerry Bock and I were sent a script, a version of The Rothschilds. The Rothschilds is based on a book about the Rothschild family by Frederick Morton. It was a best-selling book, at least in America.
Mm-hmm.
We were sent a script, and Jerry and I read the script, and we weren't taken with it. We thought, no, we've done a show about Jewish people, and we just don't feel like doing another one right now. And not only that, we're not that crazy about the script.
Yes.
So we passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 4 years later, we were contacted by another producer who had, in the meantime, obtained the rights to the Frederick Morton novel and assigned a different writer to write a script, and that was Sherman Yellen.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Bock and I, Jerry Bock and I read the new script, and we were very taken with it. It had not only great dramatic qualities, it had poetic qualities that we admired. So we committed to doing the show, and we did the show, and as you say, it opened in 1970. We had a very nice run.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and this was the second of your biographical musicals to reach Broadway following Fiorello in 1959. And I use the qualification to reach Broadway because just prior to the Rothschilds, I believe you and Jerry were working on an aborted musical on the life of Lord Horatio Nelson, the British naval hero.
That's right. Yeah, we started that with a British playwright. And he decided that I won't mention his name because he might object to it. He was a solo artist. He was a diva, and he did not want to collaborate with other people, so he bowed out of the production, and unfortunately the whole thing disintegrated.
Mm-hmm. But interestingly,
but we did go ahead with the Rothschilds.
Indeed, indeed. And interestingly enough, I guess it was around about the same time period, the late 18th century, early 19th century.
That's right, yes, yeah. And the Rothschilds... it was interesting. I had seen an actor named Hal Linden. I had seen him off-Broadway in a production of the show Anything Goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I loved Hal Linden's performance. About a half a minute after he appeared on stage, I thought, take me, I am yours. Anyway, Hal auditioned for the show. He auditioned for the role of the patriarch, the man who started the Rothschild family, Meyer Rothschild, in Frankfurt, Germany.
Yes.
And for some reason, our casting director did not like him.
Yeah.
All the rest of us liked him, but our casting director said, no, don't use him. He's an older man. If he was going to make it in the business, he would have made it by now. Well, we kept inviting Hal Linden back to audition for us, and every time he came back, we loved him, and every time he came back, the casting director said, no, don't use him. So what the producer finally did, he fired the casting director and hired Hal Linden. And Hal went on to win a Tony for the role. He was just wonderful in the role.
Indeed, great. And of course, with Fiddler on the Roof still running on Broadway at the time, apparently you were accused at the time by critics that you were sort of repeating yourselves in depicting a Jewish background.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, some of the reviews were not kind to us in that respect. And what was interesting was that years later, we had a revival. It was done in a small Jewish theater off Broadway. We had a revival, and many of the same critics who had reviewed it the first time around apologized to us. They did, which I've seldom seen a reviewer do. They saw the new production and they said, well, we were wrong. This is not attempting to have lightning strike twice with a Jewish show. This is quite different from Fiddler on the Roof. The milieu, the subject, everything about it, the nature of the score, it's quite different, and it's quite a lovely show. So we had a very good run at this off-Broadway theater. And as a matter of fact, we transferred from this tiny little Jewish theater to a larger theater. It was called the Circle in the Square downtown. Mm-hmm. It was a little larger than our first theater. So I asked the director, I said, are you going to redirect it for this new theater? And he said, absolutely. I said, how? He said, I'm going to tell the actors to take larger steps.
Good advice, indeed.
Right. What's very interesting to me now, this happens to be a very appropriate time for this interview, because some years ago, there was a producer in Florida. He ran a theater called the Coconut Grove Theater in Miami, Florida, and he did a very successful production of The Rothschilds. So he decided that he wanted to do a revival of it, produce a revival of it. Mm-hmm. Now, when The Rothschilds was done originally on Broadway, we had a cast, believe it or not, of 40 people. It was a huge cast,
yes.
40.
Yeah.
Well, the director who directed it in Miami said, look, he said, maybe there's a way to shrink this show. It'll be more economical to do it if we can do it with a smaller cast and make it shorter. So he came up with some ideas, which he presented to our book writer, Sherman Yellen. Mm-hmm. And Sherman loved the ideas, so he immediately went to work and created a one-act version of the show.
Ah.
And we gave it a new title. We called it Rothschild and Sons. And about 3 months ago, we went out to California, and we had a reading of the new version at a place called the North Coast Repertory Theater. We had readings of this new version, which went very well. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 months ago, we came back to New York, and we did readings of them here. And what makes it so appropriate is that tomorrow, we're having additional readings. We're having 3 more readings tomorrow and Tuesday at a little tiny studio here in New York of this new musical called Rothschild and Sons, which runs an hour and 40 minutes and has a cast of 11.
Ah, great. And did you sort of maintain the same structure as the original Rothschilds? Because I believe that you felt that the first act was very strong, with Mayer Rothschild being the influence. And then in the second act was less strong because he became peripheral to the action. In fact, in historical terms, he actually died very early in Act Two. But you felt that you had to keep him going because the audience interest was in Mayer Rothschild.
Right. The interest was both in the character that we created, Rothschild, but also in Hal Linden as a performer.
Yep.
The audience loved him. And when we were on our pre-Broadway tryout tour, we realized that once we had killed off Mayer Rothschild, the audience kind of lost interest in the show. So we thought, to heck with history, let's keep him alive longer. And we did. Hal used to joke, he said, if the show was out of town longer, I would have been in it till the end of the show. But the big difference, when the show opened in 1970, shortly after the show opened, Jerry Bach's son, who was 12 years old, said something that was so bright for a 12-year-old. We were talking to his name is George, mm-hmm. George Bach.
Yep.
And Georgie said, you know, you guys really blew it. And we said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, there are 5 Rothschild sons, and you only gave one of them a romance to, you had Nathan court Hannah and get married to Hannah. Mm-hmm. He said, but the real romance is between the father and the 5 sons.
Oh.
And we thought, oh my God, out of the mouths of babes. He's right. So the new version, the Rothschild and Sons, we have eliminated the romance between Nathan and Hannah, mm-hmm. and the romance really is between the father and the mother and the 5 Rothschild boys. So it's a very strong second act now. We're very, very pleased with it.
Indeed, yes. And it's interestingly enough, I think a song perhaps unique in the annals of Broadway musicals is the song Sons, during the action of which I think it takes about 6.5 minutes, you sort of cover 15 years of exposition with Mayer Rothschild and his wife having 4 sons and then growing up and becoming part of the business, all in the course of the one song.
That's right. It was the number was a genuine coup de théâtre. We see Mayer Rothschild knowing that he needs assistance if he wants to go further in his career, and he wants sons. And during the course of the number, as you said, 4 of the sons are born, and then there's a little scene, and then the 5th son is born. And shortly after that in the show, Mayer says, you know, today I want the boys to go to work in the shop. He ran a little shop.
Mm-hmm.
So we had 4 teenage, less than teenage boys. There were little boys in the shop, and it was a very charming scene. And what was the coup de théâtre was that at a certain point, Meyer Rothschild's wife, Githala, comes bursting into the shop, and she says, the peasants are going to break into the shop again. It's dangerous. So Meyer says, okay, everybody downstairs. So Meyer and his wife and these children go down into the cellar, and then the lights dim down, and you hear all the sounds of things breaking and screams. There's a pogrom, and then when the lights come up, it's 10 years later. Mm-hmm. The trap door in the floor opens, and up comes Meyer Rothschild, and up come the four sons who are now grown men. The five sons, they're now grown men, and it was a wonderful moment of theater. The audience saw what we had done and how we had passed the time, and there was just a wonderful hand for that moment. It was a great moment. And I must say, I missed that moment in the revised version we've done, because in the revised version with the cast of 11, we don't have little boys. The guys who play the older brothers, they also play themselves as children, mm-hmm. and they found a way to present themselves so that the audience accepts the fact that they're playing little boys, which is quite marvelous in its own way.
Yes, a bit of theatricality there, I guess.
Yes, yeah. But I'm very proud of that number. And as a matter of fact, as you know, the Rothschilds was the last show that Jerry Bock and I did together. We had problems on the road with on the pre-Broadway tryout. We had great problems with the show, which I think we solved most of them, but Jerry Bock and I did not solve our own problems, and it was the last show we had done together. So that part of it is very sad.
Indeed, I believe the point of contention was the firing of the original director, which Jerry wanted to stand up for, and his replacement by Michael.
That's right, yeah. We had a British director, and Jerry and he had become good friends. The rest of us felt that this director, who was a talented man, but his experience in the theater was limited, and he had not done a musical the size of the Rothschilds, and we felt that he really wasn't equipped to handle that show at this point in his career, so he was fired. And Jerry Bock was furious at the rest of us for firing his good friend, and he stopped talking to as many people as he could. And I was one of the people he stopped talking to and stopped working with, which was just awful.
Indeed, yes. And I guess it's part and parcel of Broadway musicals that you have hirings and firings along the way, and, you know, various personnel go, choreographers, directors, etc. And he didn't sort of accept that at the time.
You're absolutely right. It's something that's done all the time. People are fired. When a show is in trouble, somebody always gets fired and somebody gets replaced in the hope that the new person will come in with the brilliant idea that will save the show. What I had started to say, and I lost track of it, was that in rehearsal for Rothschild and Sons, which will be taking place in New York tomorrow and the next day, I was watching the rehearsal of the number Sons. And I was admiring it just for what I wrote and for what Jerry Bock wrote and for what the way Sherman Yellen worked it into the show. And I was thinking, it's so sad that the Rothschilds in some ways was the most adventurous show that Jerry Bock and I had done in terms of invention and in terms of craft and in terms of ideas that we were trying to work out. I thought, there's no telling what Jerry and I might have done if we'd stayed together, because the Rothschilds took us in a new direction and a very exciting direction. So it was, to me, almost tragic that the show was the end of our collaboration.
Indeed. And of course, you went on to other things, but I believe that Jerry didn't do very much at all in theatrical terms after the Rothschilds.
Well, he did, but they were in veins that were not known. For instance, somehow he developed a connection with a university in the state of Texas, and he went down there every year and practically was a member of the faculty. He was working with them. They created shows for children, and then the acting students in the university would perform those shows for children in the vicinity of this university. And so Jerry worked with them for a number of years, and as a matter of fact, I understand that one of the shows they did was a version of Pinocchio, which was so successful that it was picked up by a New York licensing house, and it is licensed for people who want to use that. So Jerry kept working. He did the score for a film, I know. He was working on a musical with the author of the play, Other People's Money. He kept busy, but somehow what he was doing, except for the movie, just didn't get seen.
Mm-hmm. But in later years, I guess you made up personally, if not on a professional basis.
Yeah. Well, although when the Rothschilds, at the time the Rothschilds opened, Jerry was angry at so many of us, but we had business together. We constantly got phone calls from our agents and our lawyers saying, now look, there's a new production of Fiddler, or there's a production of She Loves Me, or there's a production of something. What do you guys want to do about it? So we were constantly having to have meetings. Mm-hmm. And we had to develop a friendly rapport. And then what was good, there was a theater, the Goodspeed Opera House. It's in the state of Connecticut, and it does revivals, and it has a reputation for being very good at doing revivals. And they revived several of our shows, and we worked on the shows at Goodspeed, and that, I must say, it helped us to get past what had happened in the Rothschilds, and we actually became friends. So that by the end of his life, we were fairly good friends again. But during that interim time, Jerry, who was quite a respectable lyricist, Jerry had decided that he wanted to write not only music, but he wanted to write his own lyrics. Oh. So he went his own way. And in the 30 years after the Rothschilds, the one song that we wrote together, there was a revival of Fiddler some years ago, and the director asked us if we would write a song for The Matchmaker, mm-hmm. because he felt that we had ignored The Matchmaker in that production. So we wrote one more song called Topsy Turvy, we wrote for The Matchmaker, but that's the only song we did in all those years.
Yes, quite nostalgic, I guess, to come back to that. And interestingly
yeah.
enough, interestingly enough, I guess that, well, the difference between Fiddler on the Roof and the Rothschild is that for Tevye, If I Were a Rich Man, was just an idle dream, but for the Rothschilds, it's their main motivation to get out of the ghetto and to succeed in life.
What's interesting is that the song, If I Were a Rich Man, Jerry wrote the music first, and when he played it for me, I listened to the theme, da-da-da-da-dum-bum, and it occurred to me that in one of these stories by Sholem Aleichem about Tevye, Tevye says several times, ah, if I were a Rothschild. And I thought that fits that music beautifully. If I were a Rothschild, but I thought to make it more universal, I'll change it to If I Were a Rich Man.
Uh-huh.
So, and then what is funny, when Jerry and I wrote, we wrote very specifically for each show. There was a color, there was a flavor, there was a character to the music which fit the show we were working for. Mm-hmm. And when we did Fiddler, there was a song we had written for the tailor when he wins the hand of the oldest daughter title. He had a song called You Could Have the Richest Man in Town. Well, the song was replaced by Miracle of Miracles, so it was never used. When we did the Rothschild some years later, we thought maybe there's a place in the Rothschild for this song, You Could Have the Richest Man in Town.
Mm-hmm.
So we auditioned it for the producer and the director of the Rothschild and for Sherman Yellen, who was the book writer. And they listened to it, and it was very interesting. They said, well, it's a beautiful song, but there's something about it which doesn't seem right for the Rothschilds. And I thought, I guess in its way, that's a great compliment, because what we had done was so right for Fiddler, but not right for another show.
Indeed, yes, and I believe Jerry did his usual homework about studying 18th and 19th century music to get into the idiom for composing for the Rothschilds.
That's right, yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. So it was very specific to the action. Well, turning once again to Sheldon Harnick, Hidden Treasures, we'll be playing some of the Hidden Treasures, including, I believe, a cut song from, and you pronounced her name before, so I'll let you do it again, May of the Rothschild's fiancé.
Gittler.
Oh, Gittler,
yeah.
Okay.
Gittler, we pronounce it.
Gittler, thank you. And I'll have to remember that for the broadcast. That's How Much I Love You, which was early in Act 1, but this apparently was cut, but we shall be hearing the demo that you and Jerry recorded. Why did this particular song not make the final production?
In all honesty, I don't remember. It may have been that the scene it was in was rewritten, and so it no longer called for that kind of song. I truly don't remember, but it reminds me of something else. I don't know, I don't remember whether in the 2-CD set, Hidden Treasures, where there's a song called Just a Map, but Jerry and I had written a song for the end of Act 1 of the Rothschilds. Gittler has watched her husband send their 5 sons off. It's during the Napoleonic Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And he sends them off, one to Vienna, one to Paris, one to England, one to different places in Germany, and she's watching her sons go off, and she's worried sick about, will they make it? Will they be killed by the French soldiers? And so she has watched her husband sending them places, and he's been using a map. So she's left alone, and she's looking at the map, and she begins to sing about how pretty the map is, the colors, it's pink, it's green, and isn't that lovely, and it all looks so orderly. But what is it? You know, they've left out the important thing. Here on this map, there are no signs of soldiers and bayonets and guns. Anyway, it was a lovely song, and we used it to try and end the first act.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
what we discovered in rehearsal was that it was a dark song. It was too down, and we thought, we cannot leave the audience with this. So we cut the song, and we ended it, the first act in a more dramatic way. Now in this new version called Rothschild and Sons, which we're having the readings of tomorrow, the director said, you know, now there is no end of the first act. Everything is done in one act.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use that song because it doesn't end anything. And so we use it, and it turns out to be wonderfully effective. It's a very touching song. And the girl who sings it very well. So I wish Jerry Bock was around to hear that this beautiful song that he wrote with me, that it really works now.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be around in spirit at least. And the other one that we'll take from Hidden Treasures is the big number that you added for Hal Linden in Act Two, In My Own Lifetime, performed by yourself.
Well, that was, as I say, the audience loved him, and we thought we have to keep him alive longer. We were very true to history, and we killed him off at the time when he actually died. We thought, okay, forget that. Let's keep him alive longer. And we thought, as long as we're keeping him alive longer, let's give him a song that he can sing before he dies. So we wrote In My Own Lifetime, and Hal did it beautifully. We've had a number of recordings on it. It's a lovely song, and it's a song that's very meaningful to me, because when we wrote it, America was still very much involved in the Vietnam War. And so the first line of the song is, in my own lifetime, I want to see the fighting cease. And that's what was on my mind. I thought, I just, it's awful that boys are going off to get killed. The second line of the song is, In my own lifetime, I want to see my sons enjoy the fruits of peace.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things that I was thinking of worked their way into that song, even though the man who was singing it was singing it a century earlier.
Indeed. And as you mentioned in the revised version of Rothschild and Son, you've cut out the second act romance between Nathan and Hannah. And in the 1970 production, it was played by Jill Clayburgh, who went on to other things, of course.
That was one of the first Broadway shows that Jill had done. Jill was a beautiful, wonderful actress. We became friends. And when she died, I didn't know that she had been suffering from this disease. It was just such a shock, and I really felt like I lost a good friend. I remember Jill, she had never been in a long-running show, and she was complaining that she had to buy additional makeup.
Yes, if all the actors and actresses can have those troubles.
I know, but she was just a lovely person. Her daughter has become a very successful actress in New York, Lily Rabe.
Mm-hmm. And you were quoted as saying that it was fairly conventional in musicals at that time that you had to have a romance there, and I suppose that romance between Hannah and Nathan sort of filled the slot in those days. But I guess in Rothschild...
You're absolutely right. Instead of trying to think originally, I think we fell into that trap of thinking, well, we must have a boy-girl romance in this, so how about Nathan and Hannah, you know? As Jerry's son pointed out, we didn't need it.
Indeed. And I guess it's...
Although I miss a song that we wrote for Nathan. He has a song about his love for Hannah called I'm in Love. And it's just a very bouncy song, and it's got a nice lyric, and I miss that. But in the new version, we decided we can't have everything.
Indeed, and I guess you concentrate more on the long-standing relationship between Gitala and Maya in the Rothschilds and Sons.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in the new version, we've given Gitala a number of important things to sing. She sings Just a Map. She also, what Sherman has done there is animosity between the patriarch Meyer and Nathan, because Nathan, when he's in England, Nathan is doing things that Meyer disapproves of. In the new version, they get into really terrific arguments about this, and Gitala has to defend her son, which she does in a reprise of the music to Sons, and it's quite effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you once again, Sheldon, for coming online and giving us the background for the Rothschilds, and we wish you every success with the revised versions of Rothschilds and Sons. Do you think that this will become an alternative version, or do you think it might even replace the licensed version of the Rothschilds?
I have no idea, but I hope it's successful enough so that you call me and we do an interview about that show sometime.
Indeed. Well, next month, of course, we return to the very first musical that you and Jerry Bock wrote, The Body Beautiful, courtesy of the York Theatre Revival production, which you were the one who informed me had been recorded. So I tracked down that recording and we shall feature that musical next month. So returning to the very beginnings of your professional relationship with Jerry Bock.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting to talk about, because it was the very beginning of what turned out to be a 13 or 14 year collaboration with some great success in it.
Great. Well, we look forward to hearing from you next month with The Body Beautiful. And so have a great day in New York, and we'll speak to you next month.
Thank you, Rob. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.